The next part of this session is about discovering your client's buying strategies. It's one of the more fun and practical parts of this program. Listen, as human beings, we're bombarded every day with input from the outside world. In fact, the average person will receive 3,000 advertising images per day. 77% of all email traffic is made up of spam. I don't know about you, I'm about sick of it. It's always there. In order to deal with all this information, we've developed a set of unconscious patterns that tell us what to pay attention to. These patterns are different with different people. People also have buying patterns that they develop to save time and energy. These patterns determine what they'll focus on in a presentation and how they sort information that you give them. If you discover somebody's buying patterns, you can present your information in a way that they like to receive it. That's very important. In a way that gets through their filters. If you don't know somebody's buying patterns, it's very possible that your input can be screened out because they're not looking for what you're giving. You have to know these patterns and then present your information in a way that fits them. This is also very useful in other contexts, such as hiring. If somebody has a way of sorting and presenting information that is radically different from what is required for the job, it's good to know that up front. Some jobs require a very specific style, and some bosses can only work with certain styles. Now, as you listen to the remainder of this session, look for other applications of how you can use this information with your kids, your spouse, your friends, your family, your job, community, anything, as Tony shows you how to discover people's buying strategies.
Welcome back. Well, we've spent time now qualifying people, finding out what really motivates them, what really makes them do what they do. I want to give you 10 more quick distinctions about patterns that people have in buying, literally customer buying patterns. And what they are is they're distinctions about what makes people focus on things a certain way, what motivates them as an individual. And I think you're going to like this a lot because it'll help you not only in understanding how to motivate individual buyers, but it'll help you to motivate your kids, maybe you motivate some of your friends, and maybe most importantly, motivate yourself and understand why sometimes you do things the way that you do. So let's go through them very quickly. And they're also known as metaprograms. Buying patterns are metaprograms in that they are programmed ways that we go about making decisions, that we go about focusing on the world. In other words, at any moment in time, you and I have unlimited number of things we could be paying attention to. But human beings are what I call deletion creatures. What I mean by that is we tend to focus on a very small amount of what's actually going on in a room or in our life at any moment in time. And what we focus on is our experience. Right now, you could be totally happy just by focusing on some of the great things in your life, some of the great things you've learned, some of the great experiences you've had, or you could be real sad by focusing on some of the worst ones. At any moment in time, what we experience is based on what we focus on. And we have habitual patterns that teach us what to pay attention to in any given situation. In other words, when the world goes crazy and all these environmental things are happening around you, there's blood pulsating through your right ear, your breath is happening, people are talking to you, music's in the background, you can feel the air conditioning go against your skin. There are all these millions of experiences, but you focus to a very small band, and that's because you have a pattern of what to focus on. I'd like to have you take a look at 10 focusing patterns that people tend to have so that when you're talking to someone, you don't have to remember all of these. But some of them will stick in your mind, and it'll help you, and you'll say, ah, that's how they focus on things. That's their pattern for buying. And when I talk about my product, I'm going to talk about it in the language that they would listen to. So rather than explaining anymore, let's go through a few of them, and you'll get an idea. You notice that I've said that people do things for one of two reasons, and we've said it over and over again. They do it to either avoid pain, or they do it to gain pleasure. The challenge here is I've told you that people try to move away from pain. Of course, they try to move towards pleasure. And I told you that I've personally gone through a bit of a transformation in my own thinking in that I have in my life primarily been focused and believe that people do things out of the desire to do good, be good, feel good. That is, I've always believed that people do things out of this desire to experience pleasure, the positive side of life, because that's really what motivates me. In reality, in my experience, everyone in life also moves away from, and if you get a value of yours that's threatened strongly enough, you won't be focused on what you can get. You'll be focused on how to hold things together. I think the example I gave you earlier is, you know, which would you work harder for? Would you work harder to save $10,000 or keep someone from stealing $10,000 from you? I think most people would work harder to keep from having it be lost than they would initially to even gain it. And I think that's a good metaphor for what happens in people's lives. We all move away from losing what's most important in our lives. But here's a point that I really want to hammer home, and I hope you'll hear me, because it may be one of the most important things I talk about. And that is, even though we all move away from things, there are a percentage of people in our population, and I think a large percentage, that do not want to be threatened. That is, they do not want you to tell them, if you don't do this, it will mean pain to you. In other words, if they feel like you're trying to motivate them by threatening or by offering the possibility that they're going to have this pain, if they believe you're doing that directly, what happens is they turn on you. It does not motivate them, and it makes them very angry. And so I want you to be aware of that. And the distinction is just how is your main brain focused? A lot of us have been trained to be focused in our life on what I call moving towards motivation. That is, what motivates us most, and in other words, the way we'd prefer to be motivated, maybe that's the way I should suggest it. The way we'd prefer to be motivated is to have somebody come by and not threaten us, but say, hey, Tony, if you do this, we can all create this and this and this and this together. Look at all the possibilities and promote all these things that we can move towards successfully. That motivates me. If you come to me and say, Tony, if we don't do this, this and this and this will happen, you will lose my motivation instantly. Now, is this a contradiction to everything I've been saying to you thus far? Not at all. If you come to me and say, Tony, let's do this and this and this because there's so many incredible possibilities and I want to move towards pleasure, what you also need to know is I might kind of stall unless somewhere in the back of my brain something stirs me up. And that stirring up is if I get the experience that I'm going to miss out on this thing I want to have happen in the future. So again, every one of us moves away from pain, but it's a style. If you threaten me, you got a problem. Now, I'm not like everybody. There are people in this country and all around the world who you can try and motivate them all the time by possibility, or rather by moving towards, to be more specific. Like, if you do this, you'll get this pleasure. But it'll never work. They'll nod their head. They'll say, yeah, I can see that if I did this, I'll get all this pleasure. But they still don't do anything. And the reason is these people are what we call moving away from people. In other words, their brain has a primary strategy that they have to be threatened in order to change. I'll give you a classic example. First of all, people have strong emotions about what's right. Moving towards people do not want to be threatened, and they get rather upset if you do. Moving away from people can be told all the great things all day long, but unless they get threatened, they won't move. So you got to basically use different strokes for different folks. You got to enter their world. And a classic example would be something like a friend of mine, Captain John from the South Bronx. A couple years ago, I was down in the South Bronx at Thanksgiving, and I wanted to go feed some people. It's one of the things that I do each Thanksgiving to pay back a debt of something that happened to me when I was really young. And we were in this hotel, and we were in New York City, and we didn't know anybody, and you know, we were there to do a seminar. And I said, hey, let's not decorate a tree. Let's go decorate some lives. Let's go down into the South Bronx. Actually, originally I wanted to go to Harlem and feed some people. Long story short, we didn't have a way to get a car. We didn't have a way to get down there because all the rent-a-car places we called were booked. I went and did a radio show, and I had three of my partners there, and I said, find a car. I came back, you know what they told me? There's no way. It's impossible. We called everywhere, they don't have it. I said, look, there is always a way. One of the most important beliefs I live by. So I said, look, there are plenty of cars in the world. We just don't have one. Let's just go find one. Look down here, we're in a city with lots of cars, lots of vans. We need a van, we'll just go stop them, and we'll keep stopping them and asking. If you ask enough people anything, somebody's going to say yes. That's one of my key beliefs. So we went down there, and I thought I was going to stop cars. Sure enough, I walked out there, stuck my hand out, and found out that people in New York have a different idea or strategy for when they're going to stop, and one of them is not whether there's a human in front of them. And I got some learning experiences. And sure enough, I got rejected after rejected after rejected because I had a poor presentation. My presentation to try and enroll people was to come up and say, hi, you know, I'd like to help some people today, and would you be willing to drive me to Harlem so I could feed some people? It did not go over very well. Then I got better. I said, would you be willing to drive me to Harlem for $100? Then I got better. Would you be willing today to help me to help some people that don't have any food because I'm doing well? I'll pay $100 to drive me there to an impoverished area. And I did this over and over again, total rejection. And pretty soon my partners were saying, Tony, when are you going to give this up? And I said, I'm not going to give up. I said, the bottom line is we just got to keep asking. If you ask enough people, somebody's going to say yes. 1 out of 10 people say yes to almost anything. We're only at about 9. 10 or 11, we'll get it in. Sure enough, about the 12th van that goes by, I walk up and explain my story, and this man says, "I don't need your $100. I'll be happy to drive you." And he lifts over onto the other seat, reaches down, picks up a hat, puts it on, and it says, "Salvation Army." And his name is Captain John Rondon. And that started an incredible relationship. And Captain John wanted to know why I wanted to do this. And I told him what had happened in my life and why I wanted to repay the debt and that I wanted to go there and help some people undercover, not like I was the giver, just being a delivery person, because I wanted to also appreciate where my life is. And I think Thanksgiving is about giving thanks, not eating turkey. And so that's been it's created an incredible relationship for us. And I learned so much on that trip about persuasion and influence, because Captain John is living in a community. He said, "Listen, you want to go to Harlem? I'll take you there." But he said, "The South Bronx is where you really want to go, because it makes Harlem look like Beverly Hills." And it did. I mean, buildings that were three quarters burned down, everything, it looked like a bomb had hit the area. Unbelievable. And he took me in there, and he taught me a lot about reciprocation, and he taught me a lot about how to influence people that don't want to be influenced. And one of the most important lessons I got was the distinction between motivating people the way I had traditionally, which is moving towards. I'm a moving towards person. I love to be inspired. Tell me what we can accomplish together, and I'll go for it. I don't need to be threatened. In fact, I don't want to be threatened. If you threaten me, I'll be upset. Now, if I get threatened by the environment, and you've set it up that way, and I don't know it, that may still motivate me. But I don't want to be threatened. So how do most people motivate other people? Using whose strategy or whose style would you guess?
Their own.
And that gets frustrating. I could never understand why certain people who work for me, I'd be the nicest guy in the world, I should paint them all these great pictures of what they could do, and they still wouldn't do it. And when I was with Captain John, I found out what the problem was, that I was thinking my strategy was for everybody, and that's just not true. And I got the lesson vividly. Captain John goes out every night while people are freezing to death and finds them lying prone on the sidewalk in New York City. And what he does is he picks them up. One night, he picks this guy up, and the guy's almost frozen solid. He takes a coffee cup, and he puts it directly in the man's hand, and he's so cold, you hear the sssst. And when he takes it out, there's flesh all around the outside of the cup. Pretty intense. He's afraid there's no space at the Salvation Army for this man, and so he's trying to find a place to put this guy up so he doesn't freeze to death. So he goes and knocks on this particular church's door, bangs on the door, nobody comes. Finally, this minister comes. And he says, "Excuse me, sir, but this man's freezing to death, and you know, would you be willing to take him in just for the night so he can warm up?" The man says, "Listen, that's the Salvation Army's work, not this church's," and slams the door. Pretty exciting. And what he did is he said a few interesting things to himself inside and went on, said a prayer for the man and went on. And what he did next was he got a lesson. And his lesson was, he knows all the guys in the area. He knows the runners, the guys running numbers, rather. He knows a lot of the drug dealers. He knows the guys who steal. And they don't touch him. They don't mess with him because he really is out there making a difference, and they know it. So Captain John has got a unique rapport there. And one of these guys walks up to him, and he says, "Captain John, what are you doing out here?" And he told him, he said, "You know, I'm trying to get a place for this guy to be able to stay, and I've tried. I've knocked on door after door, and nobody will help." He said, "I've appealed to them as good Christians and everything else, and nothing's worked out." He said, "Captain John, you just don't want to talk to people." He said, "You don't know how to motivate them." He said, "I'll handle it for you." He said, "Have you talked to the guy at this house?" He said, "Yeah," and there's no way. He said, "I'll handle it for you." And Captain John waits outside. This other man goes up to this building. The door opens just a little bit, right? It's all chained up and so forth. He sees him have a little conversation. Lasts maybe 2 or 3 minutes. All of a sudden, the chain comes off the door. The man comes in and says, "The man can stay in my house." Pretty amazing. Captain John looks at this guy, he's blown away. He said, "How did you do that?" He said, "I can't believe that. I talked to the guy for 5 or 10, 15 minutes. You up there for 2 or 3, motivated him just like that." He said, "You got to know how to talk to people." He said, "Well, what did you say?" He said, "I told him that I knew he was a good Christian, and I knew he cared about people, and I knew he didn't want a man to freeze to death, and I also know the kind of VCR he has, the kind of television, the kind of radio he's got, and I know they won't be there tomorrow night if this man doesn't stay here." He said, "You just got to learn how to talk to people." And I never thought about that. I never forgot about that, rather. I thought about it for a long time in terms of, you know, some people you just got to threaten. Now you say, "Well, Tony, I can't do that in selling." I don't mean physically threaten. I mean threaten. See them losing out. They got to see themselves missing out, and you got to be direct. Some people you got to be direct. Some people you got to be subtle. Does that make sense? If you want to influence me towards, that'll get me excited. If you want to make sure I follow through, you also get me to be influenced to move away from pain, but you do it not by threatening, but by asking questions. "Well, if you don't do this and this, Tony, what would the impact be for you?" One of the closes that we use, for example, in our business is we'll go into a company We'll sit down with the manager and we'll say, sir, listen, let us, you know, first of all, if we've got permission to probe, we'll say, let me just ask you four questions. Question number one, if you were going to do business with a company like ours, if you were going to put your people through a program that was going to make a major difference in your business, what would be three results you'd absolutely want to get out of a program like that that would make a huge difference? And this makes the person think and set some goals that he'd want to move towards, some things that would motivate him. Now, is it possible he can tell me three things he wants out of his business and still not buy my product? You bet. Unless he's got something to move towards and something to move away from. And so the second question we ask after we find out what's most important is we say, what will happen in your business if you don't get those three results? Now, that's an elegant way of giving them something to move away from without threatening. Do you follow the difference between that and saying, you know, if you don't do this, here's what's going to happen to you? And so I get this guy and, I say, well, what would that mean to you? And what would that mean to your company? And how will that affect you? And then if the guy's a moving towards person, now I spend the rest of my time and I keep focusing on what he can get. And I say, hey, if you were to get those three results, if we could produce those for you, tell me, what would your company be like in the next 3 to 5 years? How would it enhance your company? What else would be great? And I spend most of my time. Here's the key difference. If a person is a moving towards person, you want to spend most of your focus on how they can move towards pleasure by making a decision. That does not mean you don't have any away from. It just means that's not where you spend your time. You just have it there. If a person's a moving away from person, then I would spend all my time on what they got to move away from and only a little bit about what to move towards. Does that make sense? What I call these are primary ways of sorting out your world. Okay, so a primary way is whether you move towards or whether you move away from. And the way to find out which strategy a person has is to ask them a question. And the question is, real simple, ask them something like, what do you want out of a job? What do you want in a car? What do you want in relationships? If they say, what I want in a job is a situation where my boss leaves me alone. What I want in a car is a thing that won't break down all the time. What I want in a relationship is somebody who won't take advantage of me. Are they primarily focused on moving towards pleasure or primarily focused in their life about moving away from pain? Which one? Moving away from pain. So which way would you motivate them? Moving away. Now, by the way, these are all generalizations, and they change based on context. Meaning, if you talk to this guy in another situation in his life later on, he may change. But so what you want to know is, where is this person right now in their life? And see how things are and do it that way. Now, that's my strategy. See how people are and do it that way. Don't try and sell them the way you think they should buy. Sell to them the way that they do buy.